Hey, dreamers. This is Kim Trumbo from the Generosity Philosophy Podcast. Keep on dreaming with the Dreamers Podcast and Joe Pardo.
Hey, dreamers. I'm Joe Pardo, and today I'm talking with Gary Leland, who is making his dreams come true through internet media marketing. Glad to have you on the show, Gary.
Oh, I am so excited to be on this show, Joe. I met you this weekend, and we talked, and I knew right away this was the show for me.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm so glad. As soon as I talked to you, I knew that this was a show right for you. So it was a match made in Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas.
That is correct. That's a good way to look at it.
Coming fresh off of Podcast Movement, where we had over, 1,000 to 1,100 podcasters in one place.
Yeah, I haven't seen the final count, but that was – that made, you know, I've been going to podcast conventions since 2005, and that – and I'm not saying this just because I was one of the people that were running it, but that's the best one I've ever been to. And Adam Curry agreed with me, who invented podcasting, so it must be, because I know he's been more at it than I have.
Well, I can't thank you enough and the rest of the guys, Jared and Dan and Todd. Was it Todd, right?
Mitch.
Is it Mitch Todd or Todd Mitch? Mitch Todd.
Mitch Todd.
Mitch Todd. I knew there was a Todd in there somewhere. So I can't thank you guys enough for putting all that together, and it just was a very magical couple of days.
It was very exciting.
It was, and having all those people and a couple celebrities in the house, I mean, doesn't get much better than that. Until at least, you know, Podcast Movement 2016.
You're right, and I'm sure, you know, we will outdo it, but you know, a lot of that goes to Dan Franks. He is the real machine behind the scene.
I believe it, man. He just is like, he always seems so focused and like, he just knows like what's going on. And you can always, like, when I look at him, I'm always like, man, you can tell he's thinking. I don't know if he would admit it like that, but
he's a machine. He's a machine.
Gary, so before Podcast Movement, before you got involved with all that, before you you got to this point, you have a long history in podcasting and media as well. But before we even got there, why don't you go back and say, you know, let us know how you got into all that.
Into podcasting and new media?
Well, yeah, into internet marketing and all that.
Yeah, well, into the internet I got into in 96. I built my first website in 96. I tried to do it in 94, but I couldn't figure it out. But finally in 96, I gave it a second try, and I invented it. Joe, I started this so long ago that when I asked the manufacturers for photographs, if they had any I could put on the website, they told me I was stupid, that people wouldn't buy stuff on the internet. So that's how long ago I had to go, well, I think people will buy stuff on the internet. I'm going to do it anyway, even though you don't think they will. And we didn't even have digital cameras. I would have to get a scanner and scan pictures of items. So that's how long ago it was. But I started in podcasting in 2004. I think December of 2004, I was probably one of the first 100 people on the planet to do it. I just found out, I got a newsletter one day. It said there's this new thing out called podcasting. Sounded interesting to me. Started podcasting.
What year was that in?
2004, December 2004.
December 2004. I mean, the landscape for internet was just really changing from that 2000 to 2004 time where the internet was becoming more mature. Even though there was the .com whole catastrophe thing, it still chugged on.
Well, around that time period is when MySpace was popular, and it had just been sold to Fox News Corporation, and Facebook wasn't out yet, but it's when social media started happening, I guess, is about that time period, and podcasting came out about that same time. A lot of things were happening at that same time.
Yeah. I've had blogs and stuff since probably between 95, 96. Is when I had my first blog, and I was quite young at the time, just getting started on the internet, probably in 94 or so. And that wasn't even because of my own admission. That was because my best friend, his dad was an IT director at the time and had a couple computers in his basement. So it just worked out like that, that I would go over there every single day and get to play around the internet and play around with these, you know, with these computers and learn from them.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, when I first started trying in 94, I just couldn't figure it out because they didn't have computers when I went to school, you know? So yeah, yeah. I was learning it as I went along.
So I would love for you to talk about some of the first steps that you took once you decided that you were going to make the jump into digital media.
Well, ours is a little different than everyone because when we got into it, the digital media, we created what now would be considered iTunes. iTunes came out and replaced us. We built a website called Podcast Pickle, and it was a directory. If you needed a podcast, if you wanted to find a podcast to listen to, you would go to Podcast Pickle, go through our directory. We had 25,000-30,000 podcasts on there before iTunes came out. And then you would subscribe there. You know, then iTunes came out and made our site unnecessary. I didn't even use our site anymore. You know, once the iTunes came out with the iPods, I went straight to there. So mine's a little different than other people because we built a whole directory when we first got into it. Instead of just a podcast, we had a podcast, but we built a directory, a podcast directory. Time Magazine had us in 2006 as one of the 50 coolest websites in the world, our podcast directory.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was pretty cool at the time. But like I said, when iTunes came out, it completely made us so we were pointless. There was no need to use us. iTunes was much better than we made. There was a whole infrastructure of stuff being built up around podcasting that all died because it all had to do with podcast discovery and podcast delivery and things like that. And all of that died when iTunes came out.
Right. Well, because your website couldn't sync with an iPod.
Right. Well, I'd had to use a third party. It could, but we used a third party. There was a company called Lemon. It was called iPodder, I think, to begin with. And Apple told them they were going to sue them for using the name because iPod's in the name. So they changed their name to Lemon. So we had networked with them. And you could sync to your iPod with our service. But wow. The tools through iTunes, I don't have the financial backing that Apple does to build as good a system as they did. Yeah. So, yeah, they made it pointless. But it was, for the time, a very good directory. And it's very useful.
Yeah, you know, what's funny is it seems like there's a lot of directories coming. It's all coming full circle.
It is all coming full circle. There's a lot of stuff being built around podcasting again. It's all coming back. It all happened. A lot of it died off. I know a lot of people who got out of podcasting completely that were in it in the early days. And now it's coming full circle. A lot of new companies are being built. A lot of new directories are being built. A lot of these same people are coming back and starting podcasts again. So it's gone from the most exciting thing in the world, kind of like to start fading off. Not fading off as mad. A lot of people still podcasted, but there just wasn't the excitement anymore. And now all of a sudden there's the excitement again. And now with the excitement again, all this stuff's happening again.
What would you attest to being the cause of that?
I think part of it is now the simplicity compared to back then. Back in the early days, you know, the simplicity of doing a podcast, you can do it on your phone now and upload it from your phone and put your sound. It used to be kind of a chore back in 2005 to do a podcast. And I think a lot of people, you know, who got out of the business because iTunes killed off their business, then that's why they got out. And then a lot of people were going, you know, I'm not making any money off this because that's what a lot of people do it for. They want to make money. We did a podcast meetup last night. And one of the first questions they said is, how do I make money at this? You know, that's what people and those people who get in just to make money. And I told her, I said, you know, most people I hear ask that question, you know, end up quit podcasting in 10 episodes because they aren't making any money.
Right.
Because you got to stick with it long enough to make money. Most people do. Some people jump out the box and make a lot of money. But most people, you really have to build it up over time.
I think the people that make the most money right out of the box do a lot of research and a lot of, you know, they don't just, oh, I heard about a podcast. I heard about this thing. Now I'm going to do it because somebody said that they make a ton of money from it.
I would agree, too. And they've got a system. They aren't just recording stuff, throwing them. A lot of people, though, think that they're going to do a podcast. It's going to be so good that people are going to be knocking on their doors. Can I have a commercial on your podcast? And I'm going to pay you a bunch of money to run it. That's what a lot of people think. sponsors are going to pay their way.
I wonder if part of that is because of radio success, of the being able to demand so much money when they don't even know really how many people are actually listening.
Right. I think that's it. I think they're thinking of podcasting as being radio. Mm. And they're going, gosh, people are paying tons of money. Mine is, I don't have as many, but they're direct. I got a target market. If you're looking for this target market, I've got you covered. I'm a much better value. And that's what they think. And so that's why they think, you know, but the, you know, I think we can pretty much say that finding sponsorships is probably the least profitable way to make money on your podcast for the majority of people. The majority of people that make good money on their podcasts are selling, are really making money off of something else that they sell, whether it's webinars, whether it's training, whether it's books, or in my case, it's softball equipment, you know. But even John Lee Dumas is making his money off his courses and stuff. You know, a lot of his money off his cruise that he has coming up. I mean, I think he's the name that's known as the, you know, guy who knows how to make money. But it's not really for sponsorships on his show. He probably has some affiliate money he's making. But I think if you look as a whole, and I haven't looked, but I think if you look at a whole, you'll find out that his courses or his Paradise Group or something is bringing in, that kind of stuff's bringing in the bulk of his income.
Yeah, it is. And if you, you know, he shares all that on his website. And I think of the hundreds of thousands of dollars each month, only about 20 grand or so is sponsorship money.
Yeah. So if you take that percentage wise, it's a very low percentage of his money.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So the other money is an item that he sells. And that's why I'm saying, to me, if you're wanting to make money with your podcast, that is what you should be thinking when you're going into it. I'm going to be selling something, whether it's e-materials by webinars or e-books or training, or whether it's real life products, which I sell. And that's what I talk about on my podcast, is how to sell stuff on the internet, but real live stuff, not e-stuff. Because there's a big difference. A lot of people sell e-stuff. There aren't that many people that are using it to sell real stuff.
Well, the overhead's a lot less on that e-stuff. You create it and you put it up in sure. a, you know, in the cloud, and then it just distributes.
I agree completely. The case was, I already had a store going when I got into podcasting. So I'm going, why should I be trying to like learn how to sell e-stuff? I got a whole store and warehouse full of stuff I need to get rid of.
Well, actually, could you talk a little bit about that? Because you do the Fast Pitch TV show, right?
Right, I do the Fast Pitch TV show, the Fast Pitch Cheer show, the Softball Stuff show, the Fast Pitch Radio show. I think I have another one, but I can't think of what it is right off the top of my head. And then I have the Gary Leland show, which is my only one that's not sports related. And I do that just for the fun of it. But the other ones, I use myself as a sponsor. I make these shows just so I can sponsor these shows. And I'm really different than a lot of people. I had this argument with many people that you have to wait, have NPR-like commercials, which I don't. I have regular commercials, just like you hear on the radio, about 30 seconds. And I've also heard a lot of people tell me you have to wait till the end of the show, kind of say, hey, if you like this 30 minutes I gave you, how about buy some stuff for me? And I don't do that. I have my commercials like 4 minutes into it. If you don't want to hear my commercial, I don't care if you listen to my show or not. I mean, I'm not doing this show just because I want you to listen to it. I'm doing it because I want you to hear my commercial. So if you're not going to listen to my commercial, there's no need for you to listen to my show. That's really my thoughts on it. So I put a commercial at like the 4 minute mark. And then like when there's like 4 minutes left, I have a second commercial. And I do that pretty much on all my shows that are long enough.
Yeah, I think that the idea of platform creating is really important for people who want to sell that product for whatever the reason. I think another great example, and I'm, you know, personal fanboy of Omar Zenholm and his $100 MBA. You know, he does it to supplement his class, his course, and I think that it's just a great way to help get the message out there. So you're providing free content, and it's like your guest, your one of your keynote speakers over at Podcast Movement was Aisha Tyler, and you know she's like, look, if you don't like it, it's free.
That's what I say. Like, that's one time contact me and say, hey, that show, What's that about? So I'll give you back your money. Oh, you didn't pay anything. Why didn't you turn it off? You don't have to sit there listening if you don't like the episode. You know, but like I said, I do all my podcasts, all my media to do my commercials on. It's plain cut and dried. You know, that's why I do them. If I didn't have the commercials, I wouldn't have the podcast going. And then, you know, most of my podcasts are video podcasts. So I can take those same podcasts and put them on my YouTube channel where I've had millions of views, you know, over there just on YouTube. And they're seeing my commercials. So, I mean, between podcasts and YouTube and Vimeo, gosh, I don't know how many times my stuff's been seen. Because I know I'm over 3 million just on YouTube. And that's not counting my audio shows.
And that's a great point about building an audience and a platform rather than what's my numbers? How can I leverage my numbers to go chase after sponsorships? And that's something that I, about 2 months into my podcasting career, I realized, you know, the whole sponsorship thing was not going to be for me.
Yeah, I did. You know, here's a perfect example for you and your listeners. And you know this, I know, but your listeners may not. When I first started the Fast Pitch TV show, maybe that was 2007, 2008, I can't remember now when I started that one. But I had Easton Sporting Goods, who's a big name sporting good company. This is one of my video podcasts. Contact me and said, hey, how much would you charge to sponsor our show? I had 300 subscribers at the time. Because back then I actually kept up with it for some reason. And I said, I don't know. And I gave them a number, which wasn't very much, I'm sure. I can't even remember how much it was now. And they said, we like it. We'll take it. We'll take the whole year and we'll send you a year in advance check. I was like, wow, this is a really cool deal. You know, I got 300 subscribers. I just got this big check. Maybe the check ended up being $5,000 or $6,000. I was like, wow, this is pretty cool. Well, by the time the year was over, I was up to like 4,000 subscribers. So their amount of people seeing their stuff had increased, but my money had not increased. And now let's go 7 years later. Those shows are all still getting thousands of views every year. And they're not paying anything because the commercials are in the show and I don't want to go back and re-edit them and upload them as a new feed. So they got a super deal. And those commercials will probably be in there another 10 years. All my video is evergreen. You know, that's what I do is I give evergreen training videos. So the greatest softball player of all times teaching you how to hit is probably still going to be a good video to watch in 5 years. And they've got an ad on there that they're still getting views on. So, you know, those sponsorships aren't really a good deal. I wish I hadn't have got that $5,000 because I'd rather have my commercials on all 52 of those shows.
You know, it might be worth paying somebody to do that work for you someday.
It may be someday. I got so much video I need to have done. That you wouldn't believe the amount of media I have to edit. I have probably got the biggest stockpile. I know I got the biggest stockpile of Faster Than Softball media that there is on the planet, probably. I have people sending me stuff from the 70s and 60s. You know, they're sending me old reels to transfer.
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
Yeah, they're just sending them to me. Anywhere I go. Now, this weekend was different. This was my media business. But if I go to a softball event, like last year at the College World Series, this is really kind of a funny. I'm sorry, I talk a lot, if that's okay.
No, of course, this is your show, man.
But I was at the College World Series, and I had this intern flying from Oregon. She's working on a communication degree. She thought this would be great. Her school said they could use it as their internship. So she flew out there, and I paid her some money for her time and covered her expenses. I don't want anyone thinking that I, like, took advantage of this college kid. And anyway, I told her, I said, I'll be right back. I got to go to the car and get a microphone. I'll be right back. I come back like 40 minutes later, and she's standing exactly where I left her at, going, where have you been? I said, it took me that long to walk to my car and back. All the people want to take pictures with me. So in my world, you know, this old fat man at 60 years old is a celebrity. But I go anywhere else, no one knows who I am. Hardly anybody knows who I am anymore in podcasting because I don't get that face front out there, you know. So, but in my little niche, it's just such a tiny niche, you know, and that helps me sell stuff because then they think they're dealing with me. Because anytime they call the store to order and a guy answers the phone, they're, Gary, you know, there's a bunch of us answering the phone, but they must just think I'm a one-man operation there.
You just need to hire more Garys, that's all.
Yeah, then they can all go, oh, yeah, that's me.
Or just treat it like Disney World. Everybody's got the same name. They, you know, as long as they're operating on stage, quote unquote, they got the same name.
Well, we're getting ready to start building a network of podcasts, which this might be. We have our first person lined up, but we're doing our own network, and we got, for instance, Fast Pitch University coming up, and someone else is going to be doing that podcast, but they're just going to record it. We gave them the outline of when they need to leave quiet for commercials, blah, 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 what they need to do. And they'll just email us the file and we're going to put it in our network. And then if a year from now, if they say, I don't want to do this podcast anymore, well, it's our podcast. We're going to find someone to replace them with. So it's kind of like when Johnny Carson left the Tonight Show, they got a new person.
Right, right.
And that's how we're going to start doing these podcasts. And we're going to build our network of people who want a podcast, but they don't want to learn how to do all the behind the stuff, scene stuff. And, you know, we'll have two commercials on it. They get one to promote their thing. We get one to promote our thing. And we'll start pumping these through our system and see how it goes.
Well, I think that's a great idea. I think that building a network that way, you can structure your shows. Like listening to Eric Newsom from NPR, now audible.com, over the weekend, he talked about how he took 130 NPR shows and whittled it down to 30. And basically they pretty much could like plug and play people into each of those shows.
Yeah, that's our goal, is to, because I know someone will get tired. You know, the problem a lot of people have with podcasting is I've noticed, and this is to me to an extent too, if your show's going and, you know, after a while, you start having a hard time coming up with new material because you start running out of knowledge to give away. Now, if you're just interviewing people, that's different. You can interview people forever. But you're like, if you got a show where, you know, you go, I'm the so-and-so answer man, I'm here to answer. After a while, you've answered all the questions. I mean, unless it's tech, because that changes so often. But after a while, you've gone through everything.
Oh, I agree. That's one of the reasons that this is an interview show. But I do try to incorporate knowledge into it, whether it's from my guest or myself. But it takes a lot of time and effort to come up with these types of episodes where I would talk, because I did it for a little while where I would get a guest on and we would just talk about a topic. But it's tough to come up with enough material to make it go.
And a lot of yours is going to have some tech involved too, which makes it easier. If you're talking about softball, I guarantee that hadn't changed much in the last 100 years. You're going to run out of, you know, stuff after a while. It's kind of hard after a while is what I'm saying.
Yeah, definitely. Gary, I'm curious, though, how did your family take this whole going into the internet when it was, you know, a new thing that nobody had really heard about at the time?
Well, I don't think my wife knew I was doing it because I was married by this time. I don't think she knew what I was doing. So when I first got into the internet wasn't the deal with her was when I got into softball equipment, which is, we made good money off of wallpaper, and I still own the largest wallpaper store in Texas, and we made good money off of wallpaper, and that was our first website, but our real money came from sporting goods. And I had coached the team for 3 or 4 years my daughter was on, and we would practice 3 nights a week and play literally every weekend, Saturday and Sunday. I mean, we won 14-under state championship in Texas and a 15-under state championship in Texas. So we were kind of good. I'm not saying we were great, but we were good. We were credible. And when I started building this softball website, I was doing it at home in my spare time. She was hated it. You do softball all the time. All the time you're doing softball. Now you're going to start building a website for softball? And she has apologized numerous times for numerous times. If I listened to her, I would have quit. Just so I wouldn't have to hear all that. But the funny thing about it is I started this website to make like I had a website. I didn't plan on it really selling anything, my sporting goods websites. But I thought I'd be able to get products cheaper wholesale if I said I had a website. And I did to a degree, but not like I'd hoped. But I looked 1 month, and we did $5,000 in sales. I was like, holy cow, we sold $5,000 worth of stuff. And so I had several guys that worked for me building websites, and I said, or my wallpaper website, and I said, hey, we got to quit working on that. We're just going to work on this softball website now. So we really, there was four of us, we really started working on the softball website. Next month it was 10,000. The next month it was 20,000. and then literally the next month it was 40,000. The next month it was 80,000. I mean, literally, that's how it grew.
Wow.
So it grew like that. And then I didn't think about it when I built it, but I had actually built the first website dedicated to girls fast pitch softball equipment. The rest of them were baseball sites or men's slow pitch sites. So because it's not because I was a rocket scientist, but I just happened to have lucked into what I needed was the first one ever built. And so it just grew and it stayed, you know, it's the core of our business now because of that. But yeah, it grew overnight. But you know, so you know you have a good business going when you get phone calls, five phone calls like this every day. The phone call would be, I just want to let you know this is the greatest website I've ever seen in my whole life. I'm going to tell everybody I know about this website. I've never seen anything like it. When you get four or five calls like that every day, you're on the right track.
I couldn't agree more. I'm glad that you decided to you know, put the wallpapering on hold while you dug right in and got your softball stuff going. Now, with that said, what was the fascination with softball? Did you have a daughter or?
Yeah, I had two daughters that played, and I coached them. Actually, my one daughter wasn't good enough to play. She could play, but she never got any playing time. And I said, well, we're going to leave this team, and I'm going to start a team, and I'm going to teach you how to play, and you're going to get some playing time. So I built a team around her, knowing her weaknesses. And she became a great player. Later, she was all world team at 14 under. I mean, she became a great four-year varsity player. But when she was young, most kids start at 5 or 6. She didn't start till 10. So they were way ahead of her.
Right,
and she
right.
couldn't get any playing time. Because everybody was ahead of her.
Mm. Well, yeah, it's understandable. I mean, when everybody's better and has had longer at the, you know, to get the at-bats in and the playing
sure.
time. In
and a lot of people call that daddy ball. But, you know, I was right front of everyone who came on my team. I said, I'm putting this team together so my daughter can play. There was no ifs, ands, or buts about it. That's why I was doing all this work.
Right. Well, hey, so, it's still a lot of work either way.
Yeah, but when you're doing it for your kid, it's better.
Gary, I'm curious, what's been the biggest roadblock for you?
I would say I was embezzled. That was a big roadblock. I had about over $300,000 embezzled from me.
Wow.
So that was quite a roadblock that we weren't expecting. And it happened in the downturn in the economy. You know, back in 2008 when the economy dropped and everybody was going out of business, we were hurting also. And we were having to pull funds out of our savings, and we found out we'd been embezzled from a large amount of money. So that was a roadblock that, you know, everybody says that would never happen to me. But, you know, I'm real open about that. And I have talked to tons of people about it. I'm real open about it, where most people, I think, are too embarrassed to say they were stupid enough to have that much money embezzled. But it's amazing now that I talk about it the way I do, how many times people have gone, oh yeah, I know what you mean. I had $1 million embezzled from me, or I had 50,000 embezzled me, or I had 5 million embezzled from me. So it's way, way, way more common than you think. I think I know 3 people on my one block street that had money embezzled from them.
Wow.
Yeah. They're all just everybody on my street, either a doctor, lawyer, or entrepreneur, you know? So it's amazing how many people have had money embezzled from them, and they all were smart people.
Well, I would think that the more money coming in, the more money going out, the more, you know, holes there are for their money to fall through and disappear.
Right. It's and mine probably wouldn't have been as noticeable to us if the economy had kept up.
Oh, definitely, because you still have money rocking and rolling, and then all of a sudden everything comes to a halt. You know,
and it's not a little bit, but percentage wise it is. I mean, you know, everything's relevant. So percentage wise, it wasn't enough to like be normally being noticed. And and people were pretty smart. I thought there was no way this could happen. I thought it was physically impossible. Virtually, there was no way it could possibly be done. And that was wrong. I think now there is no way it could be done, but hopefully I will never be proven wrong again.
Well, I hope for your sake that's the case. I mean, it can be tough to seal up all the holes, and then even then, you know, as hard as your work, it's just like the internet. As hard as somebody's working to seal up all the security holes, there's people out there working tirelessly and endlessly to find new ones.
Yeah, well, this is someone I've known for 10 years, had been to my house for Christmas. We'd had a baby shower for. I mean, you know, complete faith and trust in them. But I still, even with all that faith and trust, didn't think there was a way they could be doing it.
Right.
But they figured out a way.
Well, this is, I'm sorry to hear that.
It's so old history now, and we took, our attorneys went after them, and we're fine. We didn't lose money. Matter of fact, I got back more than percentage-wise than anyone I know.
Wow.
So, because people always tell me the stories. Most of them don't get anything back. So I can tell you right now, and if someone's listening, I can promise you, if you ever get embezzled, whether it's next year, 20 years from now, remember this. They will have no idea how much they stole, and they will have pissed it all away. There's nothing to get back. Luckily, in my case, the person's relatives didn't want them to go to jail. Because the person's relatives had money and worked out a payment plan.
Oh, wow.
But usually, they're not in that case. Usually, their relatives don't care about them that much. And usually, they have nothing because, like I said, they pissed it all away. Even the attorney that called me said, I haven't even seen their books yet representing them, said, but I can tell you right now. And he said the same thing I just said. They will have pissed it all away, and they won't have any idea how much they stole. And they were right. And he was right. But he knew because he handled so many of these cases.
Right.
He's real up front with me. He goes, they aren't going to have any idea. That was such a weird phone call when he was talking to me like that. I'm going, you're their attorneys?
So, Gary, I know I asked you when I met you, and it's always funny to start a sentence like that, but your childhood dream, what was it?
My childhood dream was not to be poor. Because maybe that's not the right way of saying it, because we didn't know we were poor. But I knew, just from watching TV, that a lot of people had it better than I did. So, and now that I'm grown up, I realize how poor we were. So my goal was not to be poor any longer, I guess would be the easiest way to say that.
And you certainly found a way to not be poor anymore.
I have a great life, to be honest with you. I work now because I like working. I don't have to work anymore. I could sit at home all day and just let everything self-run. Now I have enough, I think, automated business coming in. Book sales, videos on demand, things like that, that I probably don't have to work if I don't want to. But I like working. It's funny, I meet so many people who go, yeah, I plan on retiring in 5 more years. I go, gosh, I think I'm going to work till I die in my office chair. I mean, that concept doesn't even enter my mind. I like working. I like doing stuff. I like meeting people. I like talking.
Well, you know, I feel the same way, and I'm nowhere near retirement. That I just don't. I couldn't see myself not doing something.
Yeah, well, I'm 60, and I'm nowhere near retirement. I'm nowhere close to it. But I figure, you know, realistically, what do I got left? 25 years, you know, something like that, you know, till I conk off. So I'm probably going to work these last 25 years out and die in my chair.
Doing what you love.
I like working. I like building. You know, my problem is once I get really good at something, usually I kind of get bored with it and I move on to something else. You know, like right now I'm into Periscope and I know what's going to happen. I don't know why. I think I just realized this the other day when I was talking to someone. But I'm going to get really good at Periscope, and then I'm going to quit doing it and move on to something else. <You know? laughs> But I have a good concept. I still know how to do it, but I just won't be doing it anymore. I kind of like getting really good at doing something, and I kind of get bored with it.
Well, it's the challenge.
I don't know what that personality trait is.
For me, it's all about the challenge where, like, you know, I play roller hockey on the weekends, and am I any good? No, not really. I've only played since I was about – I didn't start till I was, like, 22. So I'm much taller than most of the people I'm playing against. So my center of gravity is not so great, but you know what it is? It doesn't matter that my team loses 90% of the time. It's the challenge.
Right.
And that's all it is. It's just how I can go about enjoying the challenge of it. So I'm right there with you, man. Get good at something and then you get bored at it. If it's always challenging, it's always something new to learn. It's a good way to keep the mind sharp.
Yeah, I don't know. Did you hear today that Facebook is going to start their own version of Periscope?
Yeah, Moments, right? Or mentions.
I've had this private page or this recommended page, whatever it is, this but I've never bothered to get it approved. So I went ahead and sent it in to get approved today so I can get that.
Oh,
wow. I got 22,000 Twitter fans, but I got like 100,000 or so Facebook people. So I want to start doing it where the numbers are. Maybe you can do both. Have two things going.
Just get a second phone.
Yeah, just get the iPad on one side and the phone on the other.
There you
go. Put
both
on the tripod, yeah.
You need like a selfie stick that can hold an iPad and an iPhone.
Well, I have a tripod that can hold both. I've already got that set up.
So oh, there you
I'm
go.
I'm a step ahead of you there. I did that today.
So, Gary, with that said, what are you outside of being able to Periscope and do what's it called, mentions at the same time? What do your dreams for the future look like?
You know, I don't know that I have any dreams anymore. I just am plugging along nowadays. I've met most of my dreams. I mean, I really have. I mean, you know, I think the only place I haven't been that I want to go is to the pyramids. And I don't think it's a good time to go there. So, but I mean, I think I've done everything on my bucket list. So I have no dreams. You know, I just am plugging along, having a good time, enjoying life. Taking it one day at a time, trying to find new things to do.
Hey, at least you're enjoying it. There's plenty of people that aren't at all stages of life.
Yeah, and that's part of living. You know, not everybody is excited. Not everybody likes work. I always told my kids, hey, it's work. It's not called fun. If it was fun, people would be standing in line paying me to come in here and do this stuff. But no one's out there paying to get in here and do it. That's why it's called work.
Gary, is there any last thoughts you'd like to share before we share how people can connect with you?
Yeah, I think, and I told you this in a conversation we had earlier, but people need to really, if they start working on their dream or working on a project, a lot of people give up on their projects too soon. Perfect example is that in my wallpaper business. I went to my wife and I said, man, we've been doing this a while. We're doing okay. This is back in 86, maybe. I said, we're doing okay at this. But, you know, within a mile of us are the two biggest wallpaper stores in Dallas-Fort Worth, a city of 3-4 million people. And we're just barely hanging on. I think maybe, you know, we should do something else. She goes, no, let's stick with it. Let's stick with it. I promise you, the next month, one of them went out of business. And then 6 months later, the other one went out of business, and I bought our merchandise for pennies on the dollar. And here it is, 10 years, 20 years later, and I'm still in business. So I almost was guilty of giving up too soon. So sometimes you just got to keep with it.
110%. Don't stop, because eventually someone's going to take notice or go out of business.
Yeah, I was a perfect example. I mean, I was ready to give it up. I would have been – how upset would I have been if I quit? Closed my store, and within a year, both my competitors were out of business. And I was getting all the business that used to go there. God, I would have probably committed suicide over that. That would have been the worst thing I ever done in my life, probably. I wouldn't have committed suicide. I'm just saying that sarcastically.
I imagined you were. I didn't want to believe otherwise.
Yeah.
No, I totally agree. I think that once you figure something out, you know, you might have to be able to pivot. You know, in your case, you pivoted and started doing, you know, your other passion, which was, you know, the softball stuff on this thing called the internet.
Well, you know, actually, I pivoted because before it was a wallpaper store, it was a door-to-door mini blind company. And I had people all over Dallas-Fort Worth. I sold more mini blinds in Texas probably than anyone. They were brand new. Home Depots didn't even have them. And we could go up and down the street and make $5,000-$10,000 in a day just selling mini blinds. You know, it was amazing. But that business died, and I converted it to a wallpaper business.
That's it. You know that. And when was that? When you did
that? That would be 79, 80.
When people still used wallpaper regularly.
Well, they still do. It's making a super big comeback. If you go to any movie, you go to a movie now and pay attention when they go in a house. Every house they go into now has wallpaper in it. Wasn't that way 10 years ago. So once you see it on TV, it inevitably, you know, comes into the household. Our wallpaper business is the highest it's been in years, to be honest with you. So it's already gone to that dark where they all start painting all these paint jobs, fancy paint jobs. That's kind of out now, and wallpaper's coming back in. So that's good for me. Yeah, I'm the only wallpaper. Yeah. There's only three wallpaper stores in the city, in Dallas-Fort Worth, city of 3 or 4 million people.
I wonder if that's because it's cheaper to put the wallpaper up with the patterns already on it rather than to pay a painter to paint, you know,
well, you
fancy
know why,
stripes and stuff like that.
Well, what made wallpaper go out of favor was that all the high-end wallpaper companies started selling to Home Depots and stores like that. And they started selling so cheap, the decorators couldn't make any money selling wallpaper. So since they couldn't make any money selling wallpaper, the trend became custom painting because they could make money at that.
Right.
So that's what drives that. But now wallpaper is expensive because they don't produce as much yet as they used to. I mean, you know, when a new wallpaper pattern came out, maybe they went ahead and right then printed up 10,000 rolls. Now when a new pattern comes up, they print up a couple thousand rolls, you know, and see if it sells first. Then they'll order more. So they're not printing it like they used to yet. So it's very expensive now. You know, and heck, in 86, you could buy, I could wholesale buy a roll of wallpaper for $4.99. And now it's probably, wholesale is probably $15-$20 bucks. It's expensive to do. You know, a whole house would cost $1,000 back then. Now a bedroom would cost $1,000. It's expensive, the wallpaper now.
Wow. And it's a pain to get off.
Well, now it's a lot better. They have improved that technology. Hmm. Now it's real strippable, and you can actually peel it and stick it on there in some cases without even using paste.
Oh, well, that's good. That's really good then.
Yeah, the technology's improved a lot, but the price has improved a lot too. Mr. Fans, probably your instant wallpaper. So I'm sorry I took us down that road.
Ah, it's all right. It's all right. It's your show. I would love for you to share how people could connect with you.
Easiest way, if you want to see what I do, just go to sportsjunk.com, S-P-O-R-T-S-J-U-N-K. That has, like, everything I do on it. All my apps, all my websites, all my books, all my stores. I mean, if I do it, it's on that page. That's all that is like a gateway page, because it's so hard to tell people what I do. And my Facebook page, where I'm really at, I'm on there 24/7, is Gary Leland. I don't like email, so I'm not even giving out my email address because I hate emails. I'm trying to get email free. But I will message with anybody at facebook.com/Gary Leland.
Awesome. Well, I will have both of those in the show notes so people can connect with you. And you know what, the email thing? I was just talking to Kamanzi just the other day when he got back from Podcast Movement, and he said he had over 600 emails.
You know, the problem with emails is they're not a good communication method. Everybody says they are, but they aren't. If you're using a messenger app, texting on your phone, whatever, email is at the bottom of the list. So let's say we communicate over the next 6 months. And then I go, you know, Joe told me about something. I want to go find that real quick. I got to pull up your name, which is fine. And there's all your emails. But I got to look through like 40 emails. Open them, look through them. There's my email. There's yours, blah, blah, blah. Any kind of communication that's a chat of any kind, I pull it up and I scroll through the history. And there's everything we've ever had in chronological order. Everybody goes, oh, your emails are all in order. I said, no, there are if it's a communication, back and forth replies. But you have a lot of separate emails where someone, you could just email me and say, hey, did you see that thing about tomatoes? Yeah, I ate a bunch of them. Then next week I email you, I don't reply. Hey, did you see those apples? Oh, yeah, I ate a bunch of them. So I got all these emails I got to open.
Yeah, and then you have the string underneath of it, and that gets, you know, can get complicated too, especially if I'm replying to the top of your email and you're replying to the bottom of my email,
right?
It gets all kinds of, you know, it gets all kinds of wacky.
And so I got to decipher through that one and go, nope, that's not it. Let me go do this again in another email from Joe.
Yeah.
Where texts are, I open it up. I just start with my finger sliding, scrolling it across the top till I get to our conversation. That's why I love text. I don't care if it's Facebook. I don't care if it's on my phone. I just do not like emails. I want a text communication where it's all in a stream, everything we've ever talked about.
I agree. I think that works. I think it works best.
It does. It does. People argue with me. I got these folders it goes in. And stuff. I don't need folders. If it's someone I don't know, well, they're probably not messaging me, or I won't be looking it up anyway. If it's someone I know, why do I need the folders? I can just scroll through there. Yeah, it's the best way to go.
Well, I'll definitely have both those links in the show notes for people to find and connect with you.
Sounds good.
Gary, I would love to have you on the show again in like a year or so to follow up and see how you've been.
Anytime. I'll probably have 3 or 4 new websites back by then for you.
Awesome. Well, thank you again for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
Hey, no problem. I enjoyed it. I told you I enjoy being on shows for some reason. So I enjoy it more than being on my own, I can tell you that.
Well, that's because your own show is work.
Yes, that's right.
And if it was fun, people would be paying you for it.
That's what I'm telling you. You got it. They'd be standing out the door. like they do at Six Flags.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Dreamers Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Dreamers Podcast. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/Dreamers Podcast. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the Dreamers Podcast, please send an email to j@jpar.co. This podcast is copyright 2014 by jpar.co.